Chapter 3. Shadows under her eyes, and she did not seem able to see any change, or any end to her life. "You wait till you get married, my dear," said her only friend, drawing closer to the fence. "Harry will get you one." His hopeful craze seemed to mock her own want of hope with so bitter an aptness, that in her nervous irritation she could have screamed at him outright. But she only said in self-mockery, and speaking to him, as though he had been sane, "Why, Captain Hagbard, your son may not even want to look at me." He flung his head back, and laughed his throaty affected cackle of anger. "What? That boy? Not want to look at the only sensible girl 4 miles around? What do you think I am here for, my dear, my dear, my dear? What? You wait. You just wait. You will see tomorrow. I'll soon, Bessie. Bessie. Bessie." Howled old Carvel inside. "Essie. My pipe." That fat blind man had given himself up to a very lust of laziness. He would not lift his hand to reach for the things she took care to leave at his very elbow. He would not move a limb. He would not rise from his chair. He would not put one foot before another in that parlour where he knew his way as well as if he had his sight, without calling her to his side and hanging all his atrocious weight on her shoulder. He would not eat one single mouthful of food without her close attendance. He had made himself helpless beyond his affliction to enslave her better. She stood still for a moment, setting her teeth in the dusk, then turned and walked slowly indoors. Captain Hagbard went back to his spade. The shouting in Carvel's cottage stopped, and after a while the window of the parlor downstairs was lit up. A man coming from the end of the street with a firm, leisurely step passed on, but seemed to have caught sight of Captain Hagbard, because he turned back a pace or two. A cold white light lingered in the western sky. The man leaned over the gate in an interested manner. "You must be Captain Hagbard," he said, with easy assurance. The old man spun round, pulling out his spade, startled by the strange voice. "Yes, I am," he answered nervously. The other, smiling straight at him, uttered very slowly, "Colin, you've been advertising for your son, I believe?" "My son Harry," mumbled Captain Hagbard, off his guard for once. "He's coming home tomorrow." "The devil he is." The stranger marveled greatly, and then went on, with only a slight change of tone, "Colin, you've grown a beard like Father Christmas himself." Captain Hagbard drew a little nearer, and leaned forward over his spade. "Oh, your way," he said, resentfully and timidly at the same time, because he was always afraid of being laughed at. Every mental state, even madness, has its equilibrium based upon self-esteem. Its disturbance causes unhappiness, and Captain Hagbard lived amongst a scheme of settled notions which it pained him to feel disturbed by people's grins. Yes, people's grins were awful. They hinted at something wrong. But what? He could not tell, and that stranger was obviously grinning, had come on purpose to grin. It was bad enough on the streets, but he had never before been outraged like this. The stranger, unaware how near he was of having his head laid open with a spade, said seriously, "I am not trespassing where I stand, am I? I fancy there's something wrong about your news. Suppose you let me come in." "You come in?" murmured old Hagbard, with inexpressible horror. "I could give you some real information about your son, the very latest tip, if you care to hear." "No," shouted Hagbard. He began to pace wildly to and fro, he shouldered his spade, he gesticulated with his other arm. "Here's a fellow, a grinning fellow, who says there's something wrong. I've got more information than you're aware of. I've all the information I want. I've had it for years enough to last me till tomorrow. Let you come in, indeed. What would Harry say?" Bessie Carvel's figure appeared in black silhouette on the parlor window, then, with the sound of an opening door, flitted out before the other cottage, all black, but with something white over her head. These two voices beginning to who talked suddenly outside as he had heard them indoors, had given her such an emotion that she could not utter a sound. Captain Egbert seemed to be trying to find his way out of a cage. His feet squelched in the puddles left by his industry. He stumbled in the holes of the ruined grass plot. He ran blindly against the fence. "Here, steady a bit," said the man at the gate, gravely stretching his arm over and catching him by the sleeve. "Omebody's been trying to get at you. Hello. What's this rig you've got on? Storm canvas, by George." He had a big laugh. "Well, you are a character." Captain Egbert jerked himself free and began to back away shrinkingly. "Or the present," he muttered, in a crestfallen tone. "What's the matter with him?" The stranger addressed Bessie with the utmost familiarity, in a deliberate, explanatory tone. "Didn't want to startle the old man." He lowered his voice, as though he had known her for years. "Dropped into a barber's on my way to get a twopenny shave, and they told me there he was something of a character. The old man has been a character all his life." Captain Egbert, daunted by the allusion to his clothing, had retreated inside, taking his spade with him, and the two at the gate, startled by the unexpected slamming of the door, heard the bolts being shot, the snapping of the lock, and the echo of an affected gurgling laugh within. "I didn't want to upset him," the man said, after a short silence. "That's the meaning of all this? He isn't quite crazy. He has been worrying a long time about his lost son," said Bessie, in a low, apologetic tone. "Well, I am his son. Harry," she cried and was profoundly silent. "Know my name? Friends with the old man, eh?" "He's our landlord," Bessie faltered out, catching hold of the iron railing. "Owns both them rabbit hutches, does he?" commented young Egbert, scornfully. "Just the thing he would be proud of. Can you tell me who's that chap coming tomorrow? You must know something of it. I tell you, it's a swindle on the old man, nothing else." She did not answer, helpless before an insurmountable difficulty, appalled before the necessity, the impossibility and the dread of an explanation in which she and madness seemed involved together. "Oh, I am so sorry," she murmured. "What's the matter?" he said, with serenity. "You needn't be afraid of upsetting me. It's the other fellow that'll be upset when he least expects it. I don't care a hang, but there will be some fun when he shows his mug tomorrow. I don't care that for the old man's pieces, but right is right. You shall see me put a head on that coon, whoever he is." He had come nearer and towered above her on the other side of the railings. He glanced at her hands. He fancied she was trembling, and it occurred to him that as he had her part perhaps in that little game that was to be sprung on his old man tomorrow, he had come just in time to spoil their sport. He was entertained by the idea, scornful of the baffled plot. But all his life he had been full of indulgence for all sorts of women's tricks. She really was trembling very much. Her wrap had slipped off her head. "Poor devil," he thought. "Never mind about that chap. I dare say he'll change his mind before tomorrow. But what about me? I can't loaf about the gate till the morning." She burst out, "Colin, it is you yourself that he's waiting for. It is you who come tomorrow." He murmured, "H. It's me." Blankly, and they seemed to become breathless together. Apparently he was pondering over what he had heard. Then, without irritation, but evidently perplexed, he said, "Colin, I don't understand. I hadn't written her anything. It's my chum who saw the paper and told me this very morning. ... eh? What?" He bent his ear. She whispered rapidly, and he listened for a while, muttering the words S and C at times. Then, "But why won't today do?" he queried at last. "You didn't understand me," she exclaimed, impatiently. The clear streak of light under the clouds died out in the west. Again he stooped slightly to hear better, And the deep night buried everything of the whispering woman and the attentive man, except the familiar contiguity of their faces, with its air of secrecy and caress. He squared his shoulders, the broad-brimmed shadow of a hat sat cavalierly on his head. Weeks wore this, eh? He appealed to her. Oh, Moro? Well, well. Never heard tell of anything like this. It's all tomorrow, then, without any sort of today, as far as I can see. She remained still and mute. And you have been encouraging this funny notion, he said. I never contradicted him. Why didn't you? What for should I? She defended herself. It would only have made him miserable. He would have gone out of his mind. His mind, he muttered, and heard a short nervous laugh from her. Where was the harm? Was I to quarrel with the poor old man? It was easier to half believe it myself. I, he meditated, intelligently. Suppose the old chap got around you somehow with his soft talk. You are good-hearted. Her hands moved up in the dark nervously. And it might have been true. It was true. It has come. Here it is. This is the tomorrow we have been waiting for. She drew a breath, and he said, good-humoredly, colon I, with the door shut. I wouldn't care if... dot dot and you think he could be brought around to recognize me. Dot dot eh? What? Dot 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 you could do it? In a week you say? H apostrophe M, I dare say you could, but do you think I could hold out a week in this dead-alive place? Not me. I want either hard work, or an all-fired racket, or more space than there is in the whole of England. I have been in this place, though, once before, and for more than a week. The old man was advertising for me then, and a chum I had with me had a notion of getting a couple quid out of him by writing a lot of silly nonsense in a letter. That lark did not come off, though. We had to clear out, and none too soon. But this time I've a chum waiting for me in London, and besides... Dot, Bessie Carville was breathing quickly. What if I tried a knock at the door, he suggested. Try, she said. Captain Agbert's gate squeaked, and the shadow of the sun moved on, then stopped with another deep laugh in the throat, like the father's, only soft and gentle, thrilling to the woman's heart, awakening to her ears. He isn't frisky, is he? I would be afraid to. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.